Jack felt truly sorry for him. His father was always giving it out that writing scripts was a feat of skill and endurance that ordinary mortals could not begin to match, or even understand. This had been said so often that by and large the Bagthorpes had come to believe it, and accorded him a grudging respect for it. And now here was Uncle Parker, blithely talking about writing scripts for a hobby and relaxation, as if it were golf or growing dahlias. Mr. Bagthorpe's whole status was teetering. "Only doing a series of three to start with," said Uncle Parker, modestly. "Being filmed on location in Corsica. Thought I'd go along, actually. Rather fun. Do you know, Henry, I'm beginning to see what you see in it." Mr. Bagthorpe, who had never been on location anywhere farther afield than Wigan, clenched and unclenched his hands and teeth. "Couldn't make a career of it, mind you," mused Uncle Parker, as if talking to himself. "I like something with a bit more of a challenge myself, a bit of bite." Mr. Bagthorpe looked as if he might be going to bite, if he could muster the strength, and even Jack, who liked Uncle Parker, felt he was taking things too far. He usually enjoyed the rows that took place between his father and Uncle Parker, but this was too one-sided to be comfortable. He put his own oar in. "My English master says everybody's got one novel in them," he contributed, "and I expect it's the same with scripts. I don't suppose you could write any more even if you tried, Uncle Parker. I mean, no offense." "None taken," replied Uncle Parker graciously. "Certainly the whole process was almost too easy to be true. Perhaps I have shot my bolt." "Well, I think it's terribly exciting," said Mrs. Bagthorpe warmly, "and so nice to have another string to your bow. I often wish Henry would try to develop more strings to his. It's such a mistake to become obsessively single-minded, I always think. Roundedness is the thing." She sounded as if she had slipped into being Stella Bright, and was certainly so far removed from present reality that she was failing to register her husband's problem. It was only after Mr. Bagthorpe had lurched wordlessly from the room that she seemed to come to herself. "Oh, dear," she exclaimed remorsefully. "That was dreadfully tactless of me. Poor Henry." "If you ask me," observed Mrs. Fosdyke, whom no one had asked, "a bit of competition never did anyone any harm. I should like to say congratulations, Mr. Parker, and inquire when we might be seeing these plays, it not being August, I hope, when I shall be in the Isle of Man with my sister." "Thank you, Mrs. Fosdyke," replied Uncle Parker, "and certainly I shall let you know. Do you think I laid it on rather thick with Henry?" This last to Mrs. Bagthorpe. "I do," said Jack promptly. "I think it was a bit thick, if you don't mind my saying." "He's had such a lot to put up with lately," Mrs. Bagthorpe said, "and writing is such dreadfully exhausting and draining work. But, of course, you know that," she added, surveying the serene brow and relaxed pose of Uncle Parker, and mentally comparing them with her spouse's haggard mien. "I was only trying to needle him," Uncle Parker explained apologetically, "just to get things going. I didn't know he'd take it quite so hard. Just thought we'd have a good slanging match. Been quite looking forward to telling him." There was a silence. The whole thing had certainly fallen flat, leaving Mr. Bagthorpe devastated and everyone else feeling guilty. Jack went up to tell the others, who were crowded around the airing cupboard on the second floor, gazing spellbound at a writhing mass of white maggots, as if witnessing a miracle. "Crikey!" Rosie shuddered deliciously. "Ooh, I can hardly bear to look. You are clever, William. Real live maggots from real dead meat." Jack himself was equally impressed, and, like Rosie, inclined to give William, rather than nature, credit for the mystery. "Jolly good, William," he said admiringly. "I never thought it'd work."
"When I do experiments, they work," replied William. He reached into the depths of the cupboard and retrieved bags and saucers of moulds and fungus, ranging from smooth to furry and from greyish-white to green. The Bagthorpes, awe-struck, regarded them. They were truly horrible. "I give her 2 days," observed William at length, "at the outside."
"She can't stand flies, even," Jack said. "Should we just have stuck to flies and things, do you think?"
None of the others bothered to answer. Jack's unwillingness to go to extremes was one of the things that marked him out as irreversibly ordinary, that ruled out his ever being a genius. He was totally lacking in the necessary ruthlessness and obsessiveness that characterized his siblings. All of them would have been quite prepared to raise a boa constrictor in the airing cupboard to suit their purposes, had the thing been feasible. If the family had a motto, it would be something along the lines of, "Enough is not enough," or even, "Too much is never enough." Or, as Mr. Bagthorpe had himself suggested, "If a thing's worth doing, it's worth overdoing." Only Jack was ordinary, and did things in an ordinary way. And he was in the minority, and in no position to stop a headlong Bagthorpian career once it had started, even if it was a career to disaster.